Rick Emerson Show.
Live from Portland.
I've got more Screech news. More Screech news and a...
No!
And a Portland Weird Al story.
There you go.
I think he's coming to town, by the way. I don't know the answer to that.
Dustin Diamond or Weird Al?
Dustin Diamond.
Yeah, Dustin Diamond's coming to town. He's
going to reenact the porn film live everywhere. No. I don't think Dustin Diamond... Well, I'll just read it now.
All they need to do is roll in the bathtub.
No. Seriously, just on stage.
It'll be between like Clyde Lewis and some band.
I was going to say, on stage at the Aladdin, you just sort of push it out. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let's now begin the real reason you're here. It's the Ministry of Truth with Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A Hayes fraternity member needs buttock surgery.
Yeah.
Just out of Florida.
Are they making... Oh, no.
I can't do it because I'm playing out of my cell.
Oh, yeah, sure. We've all got excuses.
Oh, maybe next time.
Oh, wait. Now, why isn't mine playing? Is my computer up?
No, that's so weird.
Ah!
That was me.
Well, why is my... Oh, it's me.
No, huh. That was...
Now, which one of you me's is it?
Me.
I don't know.
Not me.
Stop.
Okay, I'm done.
I won.
Meanwhile, the father of a Florida A&M student who accuses frat members of beating him and says he's not in it for money, the five Kappa Alpha Phi brothers are on trial for hazing. Master Sergeant Mike Jones says he's not giving a yes or a no answer when he was asked if he's on trial for the money. His son suffered a perforated eardrum and needed surgery on his buttocks after an alleged hazing incident. Apparently, they're accused of beating Jones with canes and boxing gloves to the point he suffered a perforated eardrum and needed surgery on his buttock.
Maybe they thought he was an Iraqi.
Well, that could be. The fifth defendant allegedly participated in encouraging Jones and other candidates to bear up under the beatings while reviving them with water after they passed out.
It sounds like there's an exciting new job for this guy in the CIA whenever they get out of there. They beat his buttocks with what?
Yeah, that's just typical hazing. You should have seen the guys.
Okay, do you have that? Can I see that for a moment? First of all, how does one get a perforated eardrum? But in a perforated eardrum, I have heard that a perforated... Now, is that the same thing as a punctured eardrum? I know that sounds like a dumb question, but I don't really know the answer to that. And this, okay, I don't mean to laugh at this.
Well, they're all members of the Abu Ghraib Club.
I was just... Abu Kappa Grab. There you go. There's that joke. Copyright 2006.
But they're not mutilating or raping anyone.
Steal it. Go ahead and steal away. The best thing about this story is, and I think, let me see, do I care? Do I have sympathy? Do I give a damn? No. Why? Because, I mean, it seems like if you're joining a fraternity or pledging a frater,
live on campus if you don't like it.
Let's go to our resident expert on this, Sarah Dillon. Now,
yes, sir.
I know that you did not have your buttocks beaten with a hose to the
I
best
did not. I was hazed, though.
Of my knowledge.
I mean, I wasn't hazed.
Well, you were hazed, but okay. I mean, but girl hazing is different, isn't it?
Girl hazing's more psychological. Boy hazing, they beat the crap out of those guys. They don't let him eat or sleep or shower.
Yeah.
Or they
and then there are,
do weird things
other,
to each other. And,
I was going to say, there yep. are other darker, I'm just going to say this
I
phrase.
Messed
like
up.
Skull and Bone Society type
Everybody
stuff.
Knows, I'm just, two words, elephant walk. You know what I'm talking about.
I remember they had this one frat guy I knew. They started out the day, like, there was, like, 20 of them rushing, and they had, like, 8 mattresses downstairs, and that was the only time they could sleep. They could sleep for an hour.
Right.
And every day, they'd take away one of the mattresses, and nobody could touch the floor, or else they'd be beaten. And so they'd take away one mattress every single day, and finally, all of, like, 20 of them had to pile on one mattress.
Was Lindy England down there taking photographs and putting hoods on everybody?
I can't believe they went through that. I wouldn't do it.
I'm just saying, look, I don't care what anybody does for fun. I don't care how anybody's inclined, but it just seems like if you just desire to see a bunch of naked men on a mattress together, just go with it, brother. Just be that thing. Don't try to call it hazing. Just say it's what you like to do on a Friday. Just embrace it. You know what I mean? But it's like if you got to know what you're getting into. What did they do to you? I mean, it was when you say it was mental.
No, they just like yelled at us and brought us into a basement. We didn't know where we were.
See, you don't seem like the type who would take that. You really don't. And I'm.
It wasn't.
You would seem like the type to get about 5 minutes into that and just be like, F you, and just...
Why is there a mutiny of the victims?
No, I actually...
Against the perpetrator.
That's common. There you go.
I'd recommend that.
Okay, everybody heard Tim Riley come up with that idea. That is a high concept film.
No, if I have my own private apartment off campus.
He's living in his own private
bungalow.
I was gonna say Idaho, but there's some I don't know what it is.
I was in Back Bay.
There's it does seem like that's a movie waiting to be made. You know, where there's just like some frat guys, some sorority girls, and they're hazing, and then there's just an uprising, and they just beat and kill everybody who's doing the hazing.
Oh, that's a great
idea. I'm not saying
that Showtime.
There you go. So when Dexter failed, you're gonna have a new one called Sigma Kappa Die.
All
there you go.
That.
All right, I need to get a copyright sound.
Die, Kappa Alpha. Hey. Well, you don't know any of the rhyming because
I don't. Scotty, I need you to make a sounder for when we copyright things on this program that will inevitably be stolen by other.
No bagpipes.
Other, yes, there's a no bagpipes rule on that, by the way. Just sort of a like a Mark 7 production thing. Was it Mark 7 or Mark 5?
Oh, I think it was it 7?
Clang. Clang.
Yeah.
This conversation just sounds like goddamn gibberish.
I'm trying to visualize. I've seen this so many times.
My thing
Ask
is...
Jack Webb.
So, but I mean, that was a different time in your life, though. If I can ask it, I mean, to poke and prod about it. But I mean, is it you just really wanted to belong to the sorority?
No, I didn't have any friends. I'd just graduated high school, and I just decided that, you know, Rush always sounded so interesting. So
right.
It's this weird society.
And it's a sisterhood.
Yeah, right. and I've never been really good friends with a lot of, you know, big groups of girls. Mm-hmm. So I did it, and then, like, honestly, halfway through, you know, the process, I'm like, what the hell am I doing? I just feel like I got in too deep, so I couldn't get out of it.
And you don't like most girls.
I don't, and they didn't like me.
Yeah, see, and
I was, but they did like me because I was the token strange girl.
Yeah.
Because I had, like, bright red
you
hair.
You had the bad girl vibe they craved.
They loved me during Rush. They would shove me on everyone and say, be like, see, we're not all blonde. We have a different girl here.
That's totally what it was. Many of our best friends are, you know, insert blonde. Like, yeah, exactly. Insert like a black, you know, redheaded, and so forth.
Yeah.
You were the token they want. So they're not all, like, just blue-eyed, blonde-haired.
All of them were prom queens and class presidents, and then there was me. Like I don't know how I got in there with my red hair and like black t-shirts, and they're like, oh, look at her.
That's totally what it was. No, that's exactly what it was. Is you were completely there to be like, well, we used to have a restricted membership, but now we have a red haired girl, and we do jazzercise. So I have no sympathy for this guy. I really don't. I mean, I'm trying to, and then I just can't make it work. The best part about this is all of the things in the story here, hundreds and hundreds of details. What's the headline? Needed surgery on his buttocks. The father of Florida AM student accuses blah, 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 beating him. Master Sergeant Mark James said he wants justice, blah, blah, blah. Son suffered a perforated eardrum. Now, I just don't know if that's the same thing as a punctured eardrum, because I have been told that a punctured eardrum is like the single worst pain you can possibly get. Stephen King, man, you want to talk about, and this is a nonfiction book, if you read On Writing, which is his... It's half autobiography and just half sort of observations about being a writer. He tells this horrifying story, though, about having, like, glandular fever or something he got when he was a kid where he had to go in and have his eardrums punctured with a needle. And, I mean, he just, and I've never had it done, but he describes it, and he describes it as just pain, just beyond his ability as a writer to even describe. It was like the pain, like he had, you could never even put it into words.
An ear
pain.
Infection is bad, too.
Yeah.
I had one of those.
Now, what is it when you have, is that when you have tubes in your ears?
Well, I got an ear infection for not wearing earplugs while in the water.
Yep, I did too when I went to Salt Lake City.
I never wore earplugs.
Well, you have to have irregularly shaped ear canals to get an ear infection.
My
and
dog
I have
has
one.
Those.
I know better than to get one side of my head wet. But when you do and get an infection, it's like a train running through your head.
Oh.
It's like woo, woo, woo.
It's like you're in Pete Townsend's
It's like searing, burning pain.
Yeah.
It's so awful.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you've never had an ear infection?
No. And
last time I had one, I was like in eighth grade, and I was full on crying. It hurt so bad for a couple days. Yeah.
Oh, see, the closest thing I can ever say to any kind of ear pain is when we hit fall and winter, I have to wear one of those retarded, headband. It's not a headband, it's like an
the
ear.
Headband earmuff thing?
It's a headband earmuff thing by bicycle, because if I get like a cold wind,
mm-hmm.
like if I get a wind in my ear, it'll totally give me like a searing earache, and I'm not saying that's as bad. But, you know, my dog, I hate to say this, my dog has this problem because he has irregularly shaped ear canals. Mm-hmm. And and he was in like this horrible pain and we had to take him to get it. Anyway, but Stephen King talks about having a perforated eardrum or a lanced eardrum, and he said it was just like beyond his ability even to explain. He said it was like he was seven and he could still feel, he could still in his head conjure up what it felt like, the pain. It just never went away. And needed surgery on his buttocks. A doctor testified that his injury was as severe as anything he'd seen in an auto accident, even though he had no broken bones or muscle damage. Florida's new hazing law makes it a felony to cause serious bodily damage, but it doesn't define... Doesn't this sound familiar? To cause serious bodily damage or death, but it doesn't define serious bodily injury. Seriously, this is like a carbon copy of... But maybe they're just taking care of the Iraq and the interrogation rules and the threat rules all at once. They are accused of beating him with canes and boxing gloves... Canes. I wonder if that's like a rattan cane or if it's like an actual, like, I'm gimpy and need this to walk cane. To the point that he suffered a perforated eardrum and needed surgery on his buttocks. Good God.
I wonder what happened to his buttocks.
I mean,
if he didn't have...
I don't know.
Yeah, seriously, like...
Well, they say that there's no broken bones, but there's no... You don't have a butt bone.
Yeah.
So I... So there's nothing... And there's, you don't... I mean,
what could they have done to him with... Canes and boxing gloves.
I'm thinking it's a lot of take off your pants and bend over a chair and we're going to beat your buttocks with a cane for a day and a half. Well, don't they paddle? Isn't that the thing at frats?
Yeah.
It's like the thank you survey. The problem is there's a whole generation of idiot kids that grew up watching Animal House, and then they sort of think that that's how everybody... I read this an interesting article actually online about toga parties, and they noted that like pre-1978, I think is when it came out, they noted that pre that, like, the toga parties were unheard of. They never really happened. They didn't really exist in any way. But post Animal House, everybody does it now. So the movie sort of created the tradition. And Animal House has that famous thank you, sir, may I have another ass-beating sequence. Well, anyway, I don't care.
So there you go.
Because seriously, how long, what if I, like, somebody's trying to get a job here? I'd like to work at CBS Radio. Well, all right, I'm going to need to paddle your buttocks. It's like, how many swats on your buttocks do you need to figure out that maybe that's not a thing you want to do? Mm. Maybe you should just go to school and go to goddamn class and shut up.
Oh, go to community college.
That's what,
third grade.
Go to Mount Hood. Okay.
Moving
right along. Oh, I got this screech story. Oh, these people are calling about them. Scotty almost lost an eardrum. Really? Doing the mile swim in a lake. Let's see. Pat, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yes, at my university, we'll just call the School of Hard Knocks. There was one gal that told me that she was once lined up in a basement and all of her elder sisters circled her fat around her body while she stood there in the bikini.
Really?
Yes.
That's what one of the houses did at our school too.
Okay, and this was and by School of Hard Knocks, you of course mean UW.
No, we'll just say a named university.
Okay, I was trying to.
Well, I can tell you, yeah, that it did happen at Washington
State. At WSU.
Mm-hmm.
You felt humiliated.
Well, I mean,
I would not put up with that crap. No, no way.
That's what I'm saying.
We just stood in a basement. I mean, they didn't do anything to us, but I heard. You know, girls, that happens.
Now, I would like to say this, of course. We should start doing a standard disclaimer. Violence is wrong and is not the way that you should be solving any of your problems. That being said, actually, I just say this the other day, and it turned out that it was an adult, but Sarah called me the other night because I had just been saying the other day, strictly from a journalistic, from an objective view, I said that I was surprised that more kids didn't go nuts at their high school with a gun. I'm not saying you should. It's wrong. Don't use violence. I'm just saying, strictly remembering what it was like to be a teenager and knowing that it's undoubtedly worse now, it just surprised me that more kids didn't snap. And it was like that night, actually, although he turned out to be some weird 52-year-old guy who lived in his car. So that guy went crazy at that Colorado high school. But I am really surprised there hasn't been a case where it's like, okay, we're gonna put you in a room and circle your fat, and then we're gonna beat you with a fire hose. That some kid at a college hasn't just gone crazy and killed all of his hazers.
I think the latest thing I've heard was those gals at the gal soccer team at Northwestern.
What is that?
Got busted. Just a women's soccer team at Northwestern.
Mm-hmm.
They got busted for like putting their new teammates through hazing, where they had to like make out with each other and stuff.
Well, that's okay, though. That's just those. You know what it is? Those are just perfectly understandable hijinks. All right. Thank you, sir. I never get tired of repeating this story. This happened when I lived in Spokane, and I don't think it's an urban legend because I was working at a news station when it happened, that I'm pretty sure it was a frat at WSU. where, like, they... There was some sort of hideous hazing thing that the guys were doing to each other, and it did involve at one point, and it did involve like a goat or something, or like a sheep or some crap. And it's just there's something really, really bizarre going on in that section of America. Let me read this Screech story really quickly, and then we have a Bushwatch.
Yes, we do.
All right. Well, let me read this story. This is from our good friend Melanie McFarlane, who writes for I think it's just MelanieMcFarlane.com. And she has synopsized some of the quotes from Dustin Diamond about this sex tape. The thing about that title, the Saved by the Smell, is it's just, I've gotten so many better suggestions since then. But this is from Showbiz Tonight. Dustin Diamond has put out a press release. So horrifying. This is all according to Dustin Diamond, by the way. The sex tape got out because Dustin Diamond and some buddies have, quote, let's all steel ourselves here, a monthly gathering wherein they exchange such tapes with each other. This is according to a press release from Showbiz Tonight, which is, and in Showbiz Tonight, I believe, I'm pretty sure that Showbiz Tonight is actually a feature on Headline News, which is in turn CNN. I'm not going to swear to that. But I'm pretty sure that Showbiz Tonight is a program on Headline News. So this is, I believe, according to CNN. The press release said that Dustin Diamond and his pals have a, quote, monthly gathering, end quote, where they exchange such tapes with each other. Just taking the homoeroticism to a whole new level. And they earn points based on what they're able to accomplish on the tapes. That would explain that hideous comment he makes at the end about this is worth at least 20 points. He says, quote, we do it almost like poker. The tape could have been left in anybody's home, machine, or computer. The people that are involved in this group of friends who exchange tapes are all, quote, profile people. Dustin, that's how you know it's a lie, by the way. Because
they keep referring to Mark. But it probably isn't Mark Paul Gosselaar, because I'm pretty sure he's married.
No, and isn't Dustin Diamond married? I'm pretty sure that Dustin Diamond is married or has a long-time live-in girlfriend. Good times. Here's how you know this is a lie. When Dustin Diamond says they're all profile people, because that leaves only one of two scenarios. A, he is the most profile of the bunch, in which case, imagine being lower on the show business scale than Dustin Diamond. By definition, that would be no one we've ever heard of. The only other scenario is that it's profile people, meaning, you know, people we would really care about, real stars, in which case they would almost assuredly not let Dustin Diamond into their tape trading club. So that seems like a lie. Diamond doesn't believe any of those people leaked the tape. Diamond admits the tape has, quote, wait for it, caused turmoil on the home front, end quote. So I think he's married, actually. He says, we've been doing it for a while. We didn't think it was a problem. Blah, blah, blah. He denies the rumor that he secretly, this is what Nate said, this is Nate's theory, that he actually paid the girls, filmed it, released it himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he totally did.
He denies the rumor he secretly knew about the tape's release and was hoping it would boost his career. He says the tape was private and not meant for anybody else. It was not released with his approval. He does not condone its being out there. Blah, 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 blah. So there
Yeah, there's, you know, documentation on the internet saying that it's already been sold to a you know, production company.
Well, that guy, the Hans Schmidt, or whatever his name is. The whole thing is just horrifying. And that's one of those stories that never mind. I want to say it's one of those things that you say can't possibly be true. Like a bunch of dudes getting together to swap homemade porn with each other. But I mean, who's to say? Never mind. Here's Tim Riley.
Top of the Bush One.
Thank you. The president in residence, kind of in charge. He's got the whole country staying. That's my Bush. Life is hard, that's the price of fame. When you're president, everyone knows your name. Hey, what's that there? It's my Bush. I can't believe he's actually in the White House. That's our moon. That's my Bush.
Former President Carter is urging Northern Nevadans to elect his son Jack to the Senate to help combat a Bush administration, he says, brought an international disgrace to this country. The former president told a crowd of about 300 on the campus of the University of Nevada in Reno that the nation is more sharply divided. The winner of the Nobel Peace Prize for 2002 says he's deeply embarrassed that the American government now stands convicted around the world of one of the greatest abusers of civil rights. Jack Carter is bidding to unseat Republican Senator John Ensign. Both father and son said Ensign must go because he voted 96% of the time with the Bush administration. The former president said Bush's policies have been a radical departure from previous presidents.
I don't mean to sound like Andy Rooney here, but whatever happened to Amy Carter? Oh, that's a good Amy question. Carter at now. Boy, she was she was a buck-toothed, ugly girl, wasn't she?
Oh yeah.
Just all kind. You know, if you were to
look like Carrie,
Carrie, Sissy Spacek,
yeah.
Carrie. Yeah, I can see that. They're called breasts, mother, and every woman has them. If
okay, that's like the creepiest quote in the movie you could have said.
I don't know. Well, I couldn't say the dirty pillows thing because it's second person. I don't mean to knock on the Amy Carter. I'm just saying if you were to. I think people were very unattractive in the 70s. I think the 70s, really, if you were to look back objectively.
Well, everything is photographed at earth tones. Natural light photography.
Again, yeah, there's nothing. It's a lot of brown.
Brown, yellow.
A lot of unshaving, you know, non-shaving. I think if you were to
too
look
many
back.
Handlebar mustaches.
Yes, I do believe that the 70s were the most unattractive decade this country has ever seen.
It was the body hair decade.
It was
for women.
Yeah, and all the women. Some women can get away with having very straight long hair that you just... I'm not even saying iron. I'm saying, like, you just don't do anything with it. It's just sort of limp. Some girls can get away with that. Many girls cannot. But in the 70s, every woman looked that way. My sister, God love her, my sister was the quintessential 70s girl. And there's all kinds of photographs of her with just bad brown bell-bottom pants on and so forth. And just, you know, and then, like, all of the... And I know this sounds really geeky, but all of the... Like, you see those 70s fonts, and they're all just so terrible and horrible and tacky to look at. It really is hideous. And the men, of course, are no better. The men would just go years and years without shaving anything. And, yeah, it was a bad...
And gold trinkets around their necks.
Bad scene, yeah. And they all... It was all... They all dressed like... It was sort of Studio 54 by way of Value Village. But Amy Carter sort of looked like the quintessential 70s girl. And I know that presidential daughters have kind of a hard time of it. But then wasn't she like chaining herself to fences everywhere she was like a nuclear protester?
Yeah, I don't remember her very much.
I don't, she's kind of a blur. I can't even really conjure up that good of a picture of her. All right, well, anyway. And then Jimmy Carter is one of those guys that you sort of, when you're listing presidents, you kind of forget him. I mean, my brain, him and Gerald Ford, like those two, my brain just sort of skips over that whole section for some reason. All right.
Well, here's another presidential warning to Osama bin Laden.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this the sound? Bank One?
Bank One.
All right.
Number one.
Another presidential warning to Osama bin Laden.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Attention, Osama bin Laden.
No matter how long it takes, we will find you, and we're going to bring you to justice.
Okay, there you go. Really going
to... People always clap for anything.
Where is he... Who is he speaking to then?
Who is he speaking to there? It doesn't say.
I'm guessing fundraiser.
Oh, Reserve Officers Association.
Okay. This despite the fact that according
to... He vows to complete the mission.
I really wish we had that sound clip from George W. Bush from like 3 months ago where he said, at a news conference, he said he doesn't worry about nor think much about Osama bin Laden. I don't really think about it. I don't worry about it much, so...
Well, the Congress today moved to block the Bush administration from building permanent U.S. military bases, which he vowed not to do, and control that country's oil sector, which he also vowed not to do, as it approves $70 billion in funding for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. The restrictions include a record $447 billion military spending bill. It's supposed to be a slap at the administration. It's a punishment to give them $447 billion.
Oh. So, that'll learn them.
Right. Meanwhile, the president responds to those lily-livered Democratic critics who say his actions have made the U.S. less secure.
Iraq is not the reason the terrorists are at war against us. They're at war against us because they hate everything America stands for.
Oh, is that so? Says Nancy Pelosi.
But to listen to the president this morning showed once again that he is in denial. He is out of touch with reality when it comes to what needs to be done to fight and complete the war on terror.
Well, I may have made this analogy before, but you know what? The president is sort of like this. Let me actually take it one step further. I was going to say that the president is like the Mortal Kombat player who figures out that one button combination. Like if you're playing Mortal Kombat, the original with Sonya, and you do the forward, forward, backward, backward, downward punch, and then it shoots a fireball, and you figure out that like that weird button combination on that, or Street Fighter or something, and then suddenly, that's all the kid that he just does that one move over and over and over and over and over again. And even after it stops being effective, even after it stops working, even after you figure out some sort of counterattack, he just persists in this one cheesy maneuver over and over again because at a certain point in time it actually worked for him. That's the president. People have accused us of being very partisan, very whatever, and obviously everybody, you know, people kind of know where... And I'm a big bleeding heart. Everybody sort of knows that. But it has not, it's just really, even from a speech writing point of view, you'd figure that whoever, I mean, I wonder if George Bush is just, I mean, if he's, if everybody's just sort of like looking for other jobs now, and that's why nobody's bothering to like actually fix anything around that place, like his speeches, for example. You'd figure that whoever it is that scripts his public dialogues would just come up with a different line. But I wonder if they're all just busy updating their resumes or something, and so he's just having to like work off old copy endlessly.
With Iraq on the verge of civil war, or what some say is already happening, the Secretary of State Donald Rumsfeld now admits that no one was well prepared for what would happen after a major combat ending. Well, I think that anyone who looks at this with 2020 hindsight will say there was no anticipation that we'd be engaged in this level of insurgency.
Oh, I could have seen that coming.
That's from an interview that's going to be on CNN.
Let me get a couple of these and we should break here. Jeff, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Thank you.
Hey-o.
I just have a comment about the snippet there of George W. Bush and his message to Osama bin Laden.
Yes, sir.
And say what you will about Ronald Reagan, but that statement that he made is not showing up anywhere in any Def Leppard song. The Ronald Reagan message to terrorists everywhere, you can run, but you can't hide.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Well, you know your little soundbite of George W. Bush.
Yes.
And there's a Def Leppard song off the Hysteria album that has a soundbite of Ronald Reagan.
This is the best audience ever. Really? Is there? See, I got to tell you that I sort of know all the singles off Hysteria, but the last Def Leppard record that I purchased was Pyromania, and then I just sort of bought the singles after that.
Get yourself a Hysteria, and there's a sound clip of Ronald Reagan.
Well, Ronald Reagan, man, it's like Ronald Reagan is very strange. He is a very, and when I say strange, I mean he's fascinating in that Ronald Reagan was so good and so persuasive and just had such magnetism and charisma that, look, I can look back. There's two minds. I can look back in a sort of critical, analytical sense. I can look back and just be sort of, left-brained about it and say, like, well, you know, he spent us into a deficit and he didn't necessarily tell the truth all the time. And he did sort of feign ignorance about things like Iran-Contra and whatever. And he was, you know, undoubtedly corrupt to some level and whatever. I mean, I know all these things logically. But Ronald Reagan did many things for America that were not necessarily in our best interest. But you know what? I got to tell you, when I look back in my first visceral emotional response when I think about Ronald Reagan is just, man, he just made you want to stand up and just kind of square your shoulders and just sort of walk a little taller and a little prouder. He was a little beam of political sunshine on our day. He really was. And
he had the presence of, don't screw with this guy because he'll push the button.
That's the other thing about Reagan is you can't imagine. You cannot imagine Hugo Chavez coming here and saying that crap to Ronald Reagan. There's just no way.
Reagan would look at him in the face, and that would just—he'd wet himself, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you got the idea that Reagan, it suddenly would be 1955, and he'd be in an Audie Murphy film, and it would be a whole lot of just getting a white horse and a rope. You know what I mean? So there you go. Find an oak tree. All right, I'm with you, sir. Thank you.
All right.
Points for the Def Leppard reference, by the way. All right, we should break here. We'll come back around the corner. We have Bill. We have. What do you mean, hang up on Jeff with a slice of beef? Is that like traffic and weather with a side of toast? Okay. Thank you, Scotty. It's 503-733-2970. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970. Solid State Radio. Later on, Scott Daly from FilmFeverRadio.com. Gary Baumgarten. Don't go anywhere. Here's Cinderella. My computer up. We have this push quote, but this is the one I was talking about. In fact, let me play these two back to back. At 1 o'clock, by the way, we'll have Gary Baumgarten here. We'll be rejoined by Tim Riley in a few seconds. It's 503-733-2970. This, I think, is Bush talking about Osama bin Laden.
No matter how long it takes, we will find you, and we're going to bring you to justice.
All right, yeah. And then courtesy of Aaron Geek in the City, this is him talking about bin Laden.
And, you know, again, I don't know where he is.
And, wait for it.
I repeat what I said. I truly am not that concerned about him.
Bam! All right, there you go. All right. It's 503, long as he's consistent. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, I remember that during the 70s, no one thought that fashions were as stupid-looking as they really were. I can only come up with one explanation for this. 70s fashions were a mind-control experiment by Nixon and the CIA. Everyone was being given subliminal messages as to how cool they were, and that's why everybody bought into it. They were well, that makes you wonder about today. See, this is the thing. I think about today and what we're wearing right now that we're going to look back on in 10 years and just be horrified by. Because it's like, and undoubtedly there was stuff from the 90s like that, but I can't think of what it was. I don't think we have enough distance from the 90s right now to really be able to comprehend what was terrible from that decade. But undoubtedly it was. That's the thing, is in any decade, like 20% of what you're wearing is just completely and terribly indefensible. 20% of it is good, and then the rest of it just falls into some weird netherworld. Rick, this email says, you have corrupted all... Oh, this is... who is this from? This is from our good friend, Todd.
Come on! Come on! Come on!
Subject line, new direction. Rick, you have corrupted all that is good. I have remarked before about how you've completely destroyed my ability to function when someone says new direction around me. Now, because I'm apparently 12 years old, I've corrupted my wife's ability not to giggle when she hears the term. The thing is, as you may know, my wife is as pure as the driven snow, and now she's been sullied down to my level. It's true. You meet her and you do think pure. The best slash worst thing is I couldn't let it go. Last night we had dinner with friends, and I made it my goal to say, quote, new direction, end quote, as often as possible during dinner. Then on the way home, Mrs. Corpse and I tried to make the term more hilarious and unsettling by putting different modifiers in front of it. We started with exciting new direction and then went to flexible new direction, terrifying new direction, and my favorite, astonishing new direction. The conversation came to an abrupt halt, however, when the term surprising new direction was uttered, and I said I never, ever, ever wanted to be surprised by any new direction. Thanks for ruining my life, Todd. P.S. We're also big fans of Scotty J's ovary action. All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, Scotty J.
Tim Riley.
Okay, let's go on to Bank B for more fun little sound.
All right, Bank B.
All right. Let's see here. Bank B. You may want to reload that.
Is this Dexter?
Yes,
and so
it is.
Forth? Okay, yeah, I'm ready.
What happened here?
Oh, I see. It's you who is not ready, Tim Riley.
No, I think I am ready.
Should I clear these out and reload?
Reload.
All right.
Yes, reload.
Reload.
Because they just made some changes. What are you doing?
Roll call and Dexter. Okay. 911 call and Dexter.
That's correct.
Okay, there we go.
We now have the 911 dispatch made by Terrell Owens' publicist. It's been released. In it, you can hear Kim Etheridge speaking with the fire rescue dispatcher.
Hi, I need an ambulance, please, immediately.
Okay, what's your address?
3827 Commerce
Street.
Wait, what was the address? Let's all find out where Terrell Owens lives.
Hi, I need an ambulance, please, immediately.
Okay, what's your address?
3827 Commerce Street.
3827 Commerce.
What's wrong?
Sarah. I think he took him a pill.
Sarah's writing it down.
Please. Now, I'm trying. What do I do if the pills are down the throat?
Okay, is he still breathing?
Yes.
Okay, we're on the way there, man.
Thank you.
All right. Do we all agree that this clearly was a suicide thing that they're just now lying about? I mean, that's...
Wait, what did she say in the when she was talking to the press?
Well, who is this woman that
this
we're
is
hearing?
The publicist, isn't it?
The publicist, yeah.
And what is the publicist doing there?
Popping pills.
They were all...
giving him the pills.
Trying to get publicity.
Is that the thing? I mean, if you live in this sort of rarefied air of superstardom, does your publicist just go everywhere with you?
Sure.
I don't know the answer to that, Sarah Dillon. I'm so confused about the timeline here. If only Chris Sneathan was here. 503-733-2970. I don't have Sneathan's phone number. I call him. Chris Sneathan is sort of our... He writes for OregonLive.com. He's sort of our outside contact for all sporting information. He's the Dennis Glasgow of a new age. So, I don't understand. So, he... I mean, we've all been here for the last couple of days. We should all know this, right? He went home, He claims that he took some pills and some supplements, which is a big load in and of itself, by the way, because a supplement isn't... Because supplements aren't medications. A supplement is like wheat germ and crap, and like, have some soy. So I don't really know of any supplement that when combined with Vicodin will kill you. So he's laying around the house and thinks, I'll take a bunch of Vicodin. And then, but the publicist is there, too, which is really bizarre. Mm-hmm. That sounds like the sort of thing that you would do, one of two things. Either A, you get halfway through the suicide attempt, because if you talk to people who've attempted suicide or have made suicidal gestures and then they don't die, the thing that they always say, there's a famous interview that I forget where I saw it, but it's been referenced, but there's a famous interview with a guy who jumped off the Brooklyn, or the, not the, the Golden Gate Bridge and lived. And he talks about how being like 3 seconds down, I mean, I guess this is obvious, but he's jumping off the Brooklyn Bridge, or the Golden Gate Bridge, rather, and that's like a 14-second drop, they said, or something. It's some insanely long drop, like way longer than you would think. And as he's falling, he gets about a third of the way down, and he kind of goes, wow, crap, I shouldn't have done this, you know, and he just sort of realized it was a bad idea. So either Terrell Owens took a bunch of pills to dope himself off and then decided it was a bad idea. But that doesn't make any sense either, because why would you call your publicist? Like, why would you have the presence of... If you were really in a suicide attempt and then decided it was a poor idea, it seems like you yourself would then call 911. So that doesn't make any sense. B, I don't even know what B would... I don't even know what B is. B is she just happens to drop by and there he is. And I mean, and they said it was an accidental overdose. But, I mean, really, conceivably, how does one accidentally overdose on Vicodin? Unless you manage to... Unless Rube Goldberg is there, you know, is setting up the overdose, where you happen to trip and you fall and a bowling ball hits a bottle of pills and it's, you know, then the cat hits it and it hits the ceiling fan and the pills spray down and then they fall into a funnel which lands in your mouth. I mean, it seems like by his own admission, he took, like, way more than the recommended dosage. And he ought to know that Vicodin isn't something you just F with. I mean, Vicodin is not like taking aspirin. That's a serious pill. Did you ever hear that Brett Favre story about Vicodin?
No.
Let me tell you now. Here's why you don't want to do drugs, kids. I always say that you don't want to take drugs because drugs make you leave KISS when they're the biggest grossing band in the world. Here's another reason you don't want to take drugs. Brett Favre, as Ben Stiller would say, was addicted to Vicodin. And I have Ian Gordon to thank for the story, by the way, who I think told me because he just didn't want this in his head alone. Brett Favre was actually so addicted to Vicodin. And you know, I believe if you're a drug taker, so much of it just comes with, it's the ritual and the taking of the drug that is part of the thrill itself. And so Brett Favre's thing was, when he was running low on Vicodin, and he couldn't get any more for a while because he was doctor shopping, but he'd maxed out his prescription, Brett Favre's whole thing, he would actually take, and he was taking like 10 at a time, which is insane. But Brett Favre, his thing is he would take 10 Vicodin, and then, welcome to the lunch hour, kids, he'd take them and then he'd throw them back up, so he could take them again later. Because he just liked the thrill of taking them. He said that just taking the Vicodin would give him a little buzz. Sort of like writing a bad check, I guess, that you know is not going to cash anyway.
Well, he's thrifty.
He really is. They are. The Favres are frugal people. All right. And so forth. We were just talking about McGruff the crime dog in here. Here's the weirdest thing. Sarah and I had just, we just played this, it was a PSA, right? We had just played this McGruff the Crime Dog PSA. Do you have that? And Sarah made this observation about McGruff the Crime Dog. We'll go ahead and play part of this. She walked like Jell-O on springs.
Crime prevention is your life. Your days don't
okay.
stay quiet
now
for
before
long.
Tim says anything. Sarah made the observation. She says, what a sad little life that man must lead. And I said, what do you mean?
Well, I just picture him in a production studio all by himself making dog voices.
Some broken down old guy, you know, being... And I noted... Here's,
I'm very concerned.
What did I tell you? What did I tell you?
Alone in my...
Here's the observation I made, and then Tim will weigh in on this. The observation I made is, I thought the guy that plays McGruff the crime dog probably was doing pretty well for himself. And I said, because... That's the same McGruff voice that has been there for like 30 years, and that guy is so known as the voice of McGruff, he's indistinguishable. I mean, or not indistinguishable, but he's inseparable. Everybody knows the voice of McGruff, and so that guy probably makes a pretty penny for very little work. It's like being the voice of Homer Simpson, that he's so identified as being McGruff that he can probably charge whatever he wants. Sarah and I had this whole conversation while Tim was out in the other room. I leave here. I walk out to use the bathroom. I walk by Tim, and Tim, completely apropos of nothing, says what out loud, Tim?
That is an imposter. That is not the real McGruff the crime dog.
So, and I, but see, he sounds exactly like the real McGruff to me.
He doesn't. It's a fake.
Sarah, can you play that again?
I want the listeners to know that we're giving them a fake McGruff the Clan Dog.
Just so you're
just
aware.
To be honest.
Attention, Lacey Turner. So this is...
When crime prevention is your life, your days don't stay quiet.
I think you're wrong about that.
What did I tell you?
What I remember from when I was younger, it didn't sound like that.
Yeah, but that was like 30 years ago.
I wear a trench coat.
So you're saying this is the same guy from 30 years ago?
I'm saying it's the same guy, but he's aged.
A concerned citizen. And boy, did she sound concerned.
I'm very concerned.
I don't think this is the real one.
You think the kiddies are being fooled?
I think they hired a scab.
You just picture him being pelted with bottles on his way to the studio.
This is recorded in Vancouver, B.C. Like everything else is. So they didn't want to pay top dollar to get the real McGruff the Crime. That is not real.
Well, you know what this is going to be like. Do you remember this? You may remember, and this guy's dead, I think, now, so I don't think you see him in a lot of ads. Although, that doesn't stop them from using your image these days. Do you remember the guy who was the godfather for Godfather's Pizza? Do you all remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Did they have godfathers in California?
They must.
All right, but do you know who I'm talking about?
No.
He looked like Frank Langella, the guy who played William Paley in Good Night and Good Luck. Mm-hmm. He looked like that guy. And he talked like this, and he was an East Coast kind of guy. He was like a pinstriped suit guy, silver hair, red carnation or whatever that flower is. He dressed like a very stereotypical movie godfather. And he talked with an accent that was sort of, you know, Italian and sort of vaguely East Coast. And then hit the tagline. Who remembers the tagline for Godfather's Pizza in those commercials? Anybody? No. The tagline was, he would say, do it. That was the tagline. Because they would pitch, and it was him with like a bunch of buxom babes. And he was, the weird thing about that guy is, A, he was like 100. B, I believe he'd had polio as a kid. And actually, and they would all...
How do you know this?
I don't know.
I think it's fascinating.
I do too, but I'm just curious. How do you know that the actor who played the godfather in the old TV commercial 20 years ago had polio as a child?
He took some time out of his busy day and did a little research independently.
I don't know.
All right, continue. I didn't mean to know.
No, you've ruined the moment.
I want to know the
end. You've ruined the
moment. I want to know, too.
No, Sarah's killed the magic now.
Rick,
no.
Please.
Please, please.
How did you find out?
I don't know. I just a thing I know. And I know that it's true, but I don't know how I know. I mean, I read it somewhere. It's a thing I learned it. And that was before Wikipedia, I might add. Anyway, so if you watch the old Godfather, the magic's all been sucked out of this. But if you watch the old Godfather commercials, you'll notice he never stands. Or if he does, he just leans on things. It's
like
a lot of like...
buxom ladies?
Seriously, they had commercials where there was the Godfather from Godfather's Pizza with a babe on each arm. He was sort of this cross between... That was a terrible thing you just did. Sarah,
but
you get her impression of a polio victim leaning forward.
I was stretching.
Like 30 degrees to port.
That is... No.
What was I saying? Oh, can I just say, speaking of, so my father-in-law is a side note, speaking of things that certain people are allowed to laugh at certain things and certain people aren't, my father-in-law who had polio, you know, he's in a chair, he has a travel service he belongs to that is specifically for the handicapped, and it's called, I swear to God, Gimp on the Go.
What?
Yes, it's true. There's a travel... It's like a traveling, not a travel agency, but it's sort of an agency that helps you figure out where to go and helps you find the right hotels if you're in a wheelchair or otherwise disabled. And it's called Gimp on the Go, which is great. And it's one of those things that I had to wait for him to laugh at it before I could laugh at it. Like, well, I sometimes book my travel through Gimp on the Go. And I'm in the room with him, and suddenly Lara gives me the wham, the kick under the table, and like all the air has been sucked out of the room. And I was sort of going... And I had to wait for him to chuckle. That's a funny name, isn't it? And then I was just able to go, Gimp on the Go. Anywho, the Godfather from Godfather's Pizza, he would either have a woman on each arm holding him up, or he would be like leaning on a table or leaning on a wall or some such, because he had polio. And he had those, those crutches where it's like they come up and they actually brace around your arm. You know what I mean? Not the regular crutches, like the temporary kind, but like the kind that fuse onto your arm. Anyway, so he was the face and voice of Godfather's Pizza. They would do the Godfather ad, and then they'd say, you know, like buy a pizza for $5.99, and then they would cut back to him, and he would say, do it, and that was the end. They fired him at one point because he wanted too much money. They're like, we're firing the Godfather. They got rid of him, and their sales went in the crapper, man. their sales went down like 30%. It's like when they got rid of the Duke boys and brought in Coy and Vance. And so they brought him back at like twice the price because he had them over a barrel. He just, because all of their sales plunged without the Godfather. So my thing about the McGruff guy is, the McGruff guy is like the Godfather's pizza guy. That McGruff guy is so, he's so closely identified, because we all know what McGruff the crime dog sounds like, that I don't think they could get rid of him. I'm sure that that's...
He could die.
Well, I suppose. I guess it would be sad if McGruff the crime dog died. I guess you couldn't just be like, well, kids, he's dead. I guess that wouldn't really work.
Like, I don't think it'd be on Entertainment Tonight if it happened.
I suppose.
One big fiesta for illegal aliens and homosexuals.
George, how are you, sir?
Hi, sir. George in Wilsonville thanks Tim Riley for Tim Riley, because Tim Riley's my god, so that's my way.
Are you talking about yourself in the third person?
I guess I was, yeah.
You can't do it. Adam Carolla has already
George,
done it.
George was. Listen, I heard the same thing about 3 days ago, and I said, my god, they're trying to pull a fast one on us. That's not McGruff the crime dog.
Hey. It is
It is not. I'm 45 years old, dude. You don't know where from you speak. I'm an old timer. Like
I'm sorry. I'm going to have smacked out.
They're very protective of McGruff the crime dog.
Yeah.
You
got to retire him properly. You can't just bring on a new one and tell him the same damn thing.
You have to kill him off. He has to be taken down in a gangland hit.
In a world with illegal voting machines and corrupted files, you're going to try to pull the McGruff dog out from under me? No way.
I believe. Now, listen to me now. I remember McGruff the crime dog from when I was a kid. Sarah undoubtedly does as well. He has been doing that. Look, it's like the guy who was Tony the Tiger. That was the same guy forever.
Now, this is a cheap knockoff.
Yeah, okay. I think it's entirely... Look, if you listen to me...
This is probably McGruff the crime dog.
Exactly.
two musketeers. I think it is. If you were to listen... Dude, to me, 15, 20 years ago... Well, look, you've heard those air checks of me where I don't even sound like me.
No, he doesn't have the gravitas. You didn't have... You never had the gravitas.
Okay, look, why don't you shut your hole with the insults, right? We're just talking about the crime.
You're trying to deny my reality here, and Tim will back me up.
He's just older. People age. One's voice changes.
He would get more gravitas, not less.
Tony Bennett sounded the same.
David just wrote me, and you know David Krause, he knows everything. And he said Jack Keel was an original one. He retired and is now Sergeant Steve Parker.
Where is he getting that information?
So this new crime dog was not introduced to the general public.
Well,
fake.
We're done with it. Thank you, sir. There you go. That's George. George,
well,
he's really embittered about the whole thing.
Thank you.
All right, Brandon, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello,
hey,
sir.
I agree with George and Tim. That's McGruff the pirate, not McGruff the crime dog.
There really ought to be a McGruff the pirate. Can we play that one more time?
Yes.
Hold on, we're gonna play it again.
Okay,
here.
Good.
When crime prevention is your life, your days don't stay quiet for long.
He sounds so... I would never think that this was fake.
No, it's McGruff trying to do Carl Malden.
I wear a trench coat.
My 4.5-year-old son is obsessed with pirates, and he's sitting in the back seat. When he heard you play that commercial the first time, he goes, hey, that's a pirate. So even he can tell, and he'd never heard McGruff the Crime Dog before, and he still knows it's not the original.
I got to say, if this is true that he's a fake, it's a good fake. I'm impressed. I mean, and I'm a guy, I mean, I listen to voices all day long for a living, and I'm impressed that I would never think he was a fake.
Well, he's sort of under the radar, too, so maybe he's just the passage of time. You know, he pops back up, and in your memory, he sounds like the same guy. Because I haven't heard McGruff until this spot in years.
Maybe I'm retconning it in my head. All right. Thank you, Brandon.
Thank you.
Well, let's do two more.
I would like to find out what the origin of these PSAs are.
Inexplicably, let's do two more calls. Well, let me just... Scotty, he sounds crappy. I know the origin of the crime dog spots, but I'm not going to share them because apparently my weird ephemeral knowledge scares people in the room.
It's true. But Jerry Bumgarn's coming in like 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. Don, you know, I bet he'll know. He strikes me as the kind of guy who might know that. Don, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Yeah, Rick, for several years I've been a closet...
Yes, you should finish that sentence quickly.
I'm a crime dog fan, and I thought to myself for several years that they changed the voice, but I was too afraid to say anything because people would accuse me of not having a life.
Yes, well, we're all lifeless here, sir.
No, but if they, you don't have a life, end up on the air.
Yeah.
But they switched his voice a couple of years ago.
So you noticed, so you're saying it's been not even just recently, it's been years now that it's been...
It's been several years. It's not even the same tonal quality. It's just some imposter talking with a gravelly voice.
All right.
I guess he's the Scrappy-Doo of, you know...
That's
the crime dog.
He's the Dick Sergeant.
That's right. Yeah, that's what it is. The Dick Sergeant of the crime dog.
See, that's a little comedic. See, that's a full circle thing there. All right. Thank you, Don.
Thanks a lot.
There you go. It was Dick Sergeant that was second, right?
Yep.
Okay. That was, I had a 50-50 chance of being
Dick
right
York
with that
was
joke.
First.
See, there you go. Because the joke wouldn't work if I'd said Dick York.
Right.
Nate, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, what's going on?
What's up?
Hey, I know the McGruff the crime dog guy.
Yeah.
That is an imposter. They did replace him, and the original guy was killed during a home break-in.
You're lying.
No, I think this is an urban
legend. You're attempting to start an urban legend on the show right now.
Totally is.
You are attempting to create an urban legend, aren't you?
And the guy who does the voice now is the son of the guy who originally did it. And the only reason he keeps doing it is to hopefully avenge his father's death.
Okay, that is genius.
That wins.
Okay, hold on. Okay, here's what we're going to do.
We're going to see how far we can get that to go.
I've done it in the past. I have, Clyde and I, okay, because we have... Okay, I swear to God, then we got a break.
We'll just break late.
We got a break. Here's the thing. Clyde and I actually, in the past, have tried to start urban legends with varying degrees of success. And I almost don't even want to identify which ones they are because I don't want to point them out because some are still spreading.
Is this the one about Zach Morris dying in a motorcycle accident?
I don't even know who Zach Morris is.
Oh, Mark Paul Gosselaar.
No. In the Screech video at the end?
No. Oh. No, Clyde... Okay, I can tell one of them. Here's an urban legend that Clyde tried to start. Because I'm fascinated by the etymology of urban legends. Clyde tried to start this urban legend about Cabbage Patch dolls. And it was actually not too unbelievable, if you're sort of crazy. It was a conspiracy urban legend, but Clyde...
Lead in your food.
Clyde, if you live under power lines, Clyde's urban legend was that the government introduced Cabbage Patch dolls to acclimate people to what babies would look like if there was ever a nuclear war or any sort of radiation.
That's totally true. And I'm from Wisconsin. I heard that back out there.
Any sort of radiation poisoning. That was, because if there was radiation poisoning or a Three Mile Island meltdown, in other words, if anybody got dosed with radiation, your kids would be born all flippery
with
and weird.
With hair.
Yeah.
Very logical.
Yes, with Robert Xavier's signature on their ass.
put a door back on your microwave.
And that's what Cabbage Patch dolls were for, was to acclimate people to it so they wouldn't be frightened by babies that were born from radiation. Clyde, to the best of my knowledge, is the one who started that. He told me he did it intentionally to see how far it could spread. So, all right. So we get you ought to start that like later today on a message board, Nate, or something. You ought to start that right now. And everybody who's listening to this program knows.
One person.
Right now, you are the patient zero of this urban legend.
All right. Cool.
Nate, the McGruff the crime dog, avenging father, home break, and however you want to do it, everybody listening to the show right now, you are all witnesses at the creation of this urban legend, and we're going to see how far we can spread it.
Done and done, sir.
All right, thank you, sir.
And email it to FARC.
Yeah, make sure it gets posted on FARC.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
And Drudge.
They're pretty good. I mean, the kids on the message board there, they can smell something that's fake after just a few posts. All right. We should,
What an exciting program.
No, it really, see, you're witnessing an exciting, a new thing.
Direction.
Yes, thank you. All right, yes, it's exactly what it is. All right, it's 503, in fact, there you go, thank you. It's 503-733-2970, it's Rick Emerson Show, Gary Baumgarten, I said just don't go anywhere.